Tell him we want to hear his opinions and his advice. But we have to start somewhere, and the beginning is always best. So our initial focus will be a detailed physical and behavioral description of the two men, starting randomly with the American. First, we want to hear it in his own words, and then we're going to show him some photographs. The translator said it all in German, facing Klopp, with animation and careful enunciation. Klopp followed along, nodding gravely, as if contemplating a long task of great difficulty, but willing to give it his best. Reacher said, "Does Mr. Klopp go to that bar often?" The translator translated, and Klopp answered, quite long, and the translator said,
"He goes either two or three times a week. He has two favorite bars, which he rotates to match his five-day work pattern."
"How long has he been going to that bar?"
"Nearly 2 years."
"Has he seen the American in that bar before?"
There was a pause, thinking time, then some German and, "Yes, he thinks he saw him there 2 or possibly 3 months ago."
"Thinks?"
"He's as sure as he can be. The gentleman he's thinking of 2 or 3 months ago was wearing a hat at the time, which makes it hard to be certain. He would be prepared to admit he might be wrong."
"What kind of hat?"
"A baseball cap."
"Anything on it?"
"He thinks a red star, but it was hard to see."
"Long time ago, too."
"He's remembering it by the weather."
"But either way, the American is not a regular customer."
"No, he's not."
"How does he know the guy is American?" There was a long consultation, a long list. The translator said,
"He was speaking English. His accent, the loudness of his voice, the way he dressed, the way he moved."
"Okay," Reacher said. "Now we need a description. Did he see the American standing up or sitting down?"
"Both. Walking in, sitting alone, sitting with the Arab, sitting alone again, and walking out."
"How tall is the American?"
1.70 meters, 1.75 meters.
5 feet 8 inches, Griezmann said. "Completely average." Reacher asked, "Is he fat or thin?" The translator said,
"Neither."
"Solid?"
"Not exactly."
"Strong or weak?"
"Quite strong."
"If he played a sport, what sport would he play?" Klopp didn't answer. Reacher said, "Think about what's on the TV. Think about the Olympic Games. What sport would he play?" Klopp thought hard and long, as if going through the whole sporting calendar in great detail. Eventually, he spoke in German, a long speculation, arguments for and against, a little of this and a little of that. The translator said,
"He thinks probably a middle-distance runner, perhaps the 1,500 meters upward, maybe even a long-distance runner up to the 10,000 meters, but he wasn't an unnatural stick insect like a marathon runner."
"A stick insect from Africa, right?"
"He added that, yes."
"Tell me everything, okay?"
"I apologize."
So the American is average height, on the wiry side of average weight, possibly full of bounce and energy, that kind of guy?
"Yes, always moving."
"How long was he there before the Saudi guy showed up?"
"Perhaps 5 minutes. He was just the man in a bar. No one was interested in him."
"What did he drink?"
"A 0.5 liter of lager, quite slowly. He still had most of it left after the meeting had finished."
"How long did he stay after the Saudi guy left?"
"Perhaps 30 minutes.
What did the sorry guy drink?
Nothing. He would not have been served.
What kind of hair has the American got? Klopp shrugged at the translator, and she chided him, telling him to think. He said something, awkwardly, clearly not his field of expertise. But then he carried on, determined to muster all the details he could. It turned into a long speech. Eventually the translator said,
"The American had fair hair, the color of hay or straw in the summer. His hair was quite normal at the sides, but much longer at the top, like a style, as if he could flop it around, like Elvis Presley."
Was it neat?
Yes, it was neatly brushed.
Product?
What is that?
Oil, like he uses, or wax or something?
No, just natural.
Eyes? The face, as described, went with the hair and the build. Deep-set blue eyes, tight skin on the forehead, prominent cheekbones, a thin nose, white teeth, an unsmiling mouth, a firm chin. No visible damage. No major scars, no tattoos. An old tan, and some lines around the eyes. More likely squint lines than laugh lines or frown lines. A groove down one cheek from the clamp of the jaw, and maybe a missing tooth. But all of a piece, narrow, but all horizontal. The brows, the eyes, the high cheekbones, the thin slash of the mouth, the clamped and working grimace. His age was more likely 30-something than 20-something. Richard said, "Tell Mr. Klopp we'll want him to repeat all of that for the sketch artist." The translator passed on the message and Klopp nodded. Richard asked, "What was the American wearing?" Klopp answered, and the translator said,
"Actually a Levi's jacket, the same as yours."
"Exactly the same?"
"Identical."
"Small world," Reacher said. "Now ask him why he feels the Saudi guy was agitated. Only first-hand evidence, only what he saw or heard. Tell him to leave the political analysis for later." There was a long discussion in German, with Griezmann chipping in, with a lot of back and forth to get it all straight, and then the translator said,
"On reflection, Herr Klopp feels excited might be a better word than agitated. Excited and nervous. The American told the Arab something, and the Arab reacted in that manner."
"Did Mr. Klopp hear what was said?"
"No."
"How long was that part of the discussion?"
"Possibly a minute."
"How long did the Saudi guy stay?"
"He left immediately."
"And the American stayed another 30 minutes?
"Almost exactly."
"Okay," Reacher said. "Tell Mr. Klopp it's time to look at the photographs." Reacher put his tote bag on the table. He said, "Tell Mr. Klopp there are a lot of photographs. He should feel free to take a break whenever he needs to. Tell him to bear in mind everything he told us about the man's face, all those details, and to use them as a mental checklist for when he's deciding. Tell him hair can change, but eyes and ears never do. Tell him it's okay not to be sure. He can make a pile of possibles and check them again later. But tell him not to make mistakes." Nagley unpacked the bag. 200 cards. She separated them into 5 equal stacks of 40 each. Less daunting that way. She slid the first stack over to Klopp. He got to work, without visible enthusiasm, but with a degree of efficiency, like a clerical supervisor. Reacher watched his eyes. He seemed to be following the checklist suggestion, one item after another. Eyes, nose, cheekbones, mouth, chin. Every step of the way was a separate yes or no decision. Most candidates failed early. The discard pile grew large. Fat faces, round faces, dark eyes, full lips. No one in the first stack of 40 made the cut, not even as possibles. Negley slid the second stack into position. She caught Reacher's eye and winked. He nodded. The Hamburg expat was top of the pile, the counterculture guy with the shock of hair. Klopp rejected him immediately. Reacher saw why. No cheekbones and pouty rosebud lips, not a thin, unsmiling slash. The discard pile grew tall. There was no possibles pile. Negley slid the third stack into position. Klopp got to work. The translator sat quiet. Griezmann went out and came back, and a minute later a man came in with a pot of coffee and five cups. Klopp didn't pause. He took cards off Negley's stack, one at a time, left thumb and index finger, and brought them closer to him and looked at them and slapped them down, one after the other. The discard pile grew taller. There was still no possibles pile. Klopp said something in German, and the translator said,
"He apologizes for not being more helpful."
Reacher said, "Ask him how sure he is about his discards." She did, and said,
100%.
"That's impressive."
"He says he has that kind of mind."
Then she paused. She glanced at Reacher, who had told her to tell him everything, and then at Griezmann, as if for permission to do so. She said,
"Mr. Klopp trained as an auditor in East Germany and was second in command at a very large factory near the Polish border. He wishes us to understand he is overqualified for his current position, but all the better jobs here in the West are prohibited to ethnic Germans and given instead to people from Turkey."
"Does he want to take a break? He's got about 80 more to look at."
She asked, and he answered, and she said, "He is happy to continue. He has the American's face fixed firmly in his mind. Either it is here or it is not. He invites you to check his work against the sketch he will produce with our artist. He thinks you will find his conclusions to be accurate."
"Okay. Tell him to get it done." There was nothing in the fourth stack, not even a possible. 160 gone by. Negley slid the final 40 into place. Reacher watched Klopp. One card at a time, left thumb and index finger, held easy, not near and not far. Decent vision with his glasses on, genuine concentration, not a bored, blank stare or an impatient sneer, a calm focus. He was interrogating the photographs, one by one, point by point, eyes, cheekbones, mouth. Yes or no? No. Time after time, always no. The cards slapped down. By that point, Reacher had seen more than 170 versions of what the guy wasn't, which started to define what he was, which was what Klopp had said. Deep-set blue eyes, prominent cheekbones, a thin nose and unsmiling mouth, a firm chin. There were no other variants left. All under hair, currently the color of straw, currently normal on the sides and long on the top, like a style. Reacher watched. The discard pile grew taller. There was still no possibles pile. Then Klopp scrabbled up the last card and looked at it. The same focus as every other card, and he put it on the discard pile. Reacher called from Griezmann's office. They got Landry, who got Vanderbilt, who got White, who sounded sleepy. It was 5 o'clock in the morning in Virginia. Reacher said. The guy saw the rendezvous. No doubt about it. The choreography was exactly right. The odds against the same type of thing happening in the same neighborhood at the same time are astronomical.
Did he IT the American?
No, Reacher said. Ratcliffe is wrong. This is not about computers. He put two whispers together for no reason at all. There's no connection. They're separate. Just random.
Okay, we better tell him.
You better get back here. No, Reacher said. We're staying. Chapter 12. The sketch artist wanted to work alone, so Griezmann took Reacher and Negley on a walking tour of the station. They saw more interview rooms and offices for officers and squad rooms and the booking area and the holding cells and the evidence room and a cafeteria. Serious people were working hard everywhere. Griezmann seemed proud of it all. Reacher figured he should. It was impressive. They pushed through a door and took a second-story pedestrian skybridge to a new part of the complex, the science center, forensics, the labs. First up was a large white room with ranks of computers on long white benches. Griezmann said, "We think this is how people will steal from each other in the future. Already, 3% of Germans use the Internet, more than 15% in your own country, and we are sure it will grow." They walked on, past clean rooms with airlock doors, like operating rooms in a hospital. Chemical analysis, firearms, blood, tissue, DNA, laboratory benches, hundreds of glass tubes, all kinds of weird machines. The budget must have been immense. Griezmann said, "The university co-funds some of it. Their scientists work here, which is good for both of us. And we get a lot of federal money, too. It's a shared facility for the German army also, under certain circumstances." Reacher nodded. Like Waterman had said, back in cooperation school. They took stairs down to the ground floor. The air was fresher, like there was open access to the outside. They went through a door to a vehicle bay, like the service station or a tire shop, but immaculately clean, almost antiseptic. Slick white paint on the floor, white tile on the walls, bright white light. No oil stains, no dirt, no clutter. There were two vehicles in there. One was a big sedan with a damaged front corner. Worse than a fender bender, but not a wreck. Not a write-off. Griezmann said, "There was a hit-and-run accident. A child was badly injured. The driver didn't stop. We think this was the car. The owner denies it. We hope to find blood and fibers. But it will be a challenge." The other car in the shop was a pretty little coupe with its doors standing open. A guy in a white coat was leaning in. Griezmann said, "We are fingerprinting the inside. There is a homicide. We think the perpetrator might have been the victim's last passenger. She was a prostitute. It can be a dangerous profession." Reacher wandered over and took a look. It was a cute car, especially compared to his recycled Caprice, and immaculate. It shone under the lights. It fit right in with the antiseptic atmosphere. He said, "This is a very clean automobile." Griezmann said, "So was her apartment. Did she have a housekeeper?"
"A service, I think."
"And she probably had her car washed, too. Maybe on a regular basis. Waxed and detailed inside and out, which is good. Not many old prints." Griezmann spoke German to the guy in the lab coat. A request for a progress report, possibly. The guy answered and pointed here and there. Griezmann stuck his head in for a better view. Then he backed out again, ponderously, and said, "We think there's a partial left thumb on the seatbelt release, but it's narrow because the button is ridged and smudged somehow. Possibly the same thing on the seatbelt tongue, but the surface is hopeless. Hard plastic with tiny pimples for grip. A regulation, no doubt. Be sure to have a word with the department concerned. They're not helping us." Richard said, "What kind of a car is this?" Griezmann said, "It's an Audi." "Then Audi has already helped you. I had a friend with the same problem about a year ago. Fort Hood, which is about the same size as Hamburg. Off-post, married quarters. A Jaguar, not an Audi, but they're both premium brands. They put chrome on their door release levers. Looks expensive, feels great, and it gleams in the dark so you can find it. All of which enhances what they call the user experience. The passenger puts his middle finger in and pulls. Not his little finger, because he thinks it's too weak, and not his ring finger, because he thinks it's too clumsy, and not his index finger, because his wrist would need to rotate an extra 25%, which borders on the uncomfortable. Always his middle finger. So you need to take the door apart and print the back of the lever. That's what my friend was saying. The guy in the lab coat said something in German. Unknown words, but an indignant tone. Clearly, he could follow along in English. Griezmann said, "So it was going to be our next step anyway. Did your friend secure a conviction?" "No," Richard said. "The chain of evidence broke down. He could prove the guy's print was on the lever, but he couldn't prove the lever came from the ex-wife's car. Defense counsel said it could have come from anywhere."
"What should he have done?"
"Before he started, he should have engraved his initials on the front of the lever, while it was still right there on the door, with a dentist's drill. He should have had himself photographed doing it, wide shots to establish the car, and then close-ups." Griezmann spoke in German, a long list of instructions. Richard caught the word Zahnarzt, which he knew from having a toothache in Frankfurt meant dentist. The guy in the lab coat listened and nodded. They got back to the interview room just as Klopp was getting set to leave. The sketch artist gave them a copy of a drawing made with colored pencils. Griezmann told them he would fax a further copy to McLean, Virginia, and then keep the original on file. Reacher and Nagley carried their copy to the door, where the wired glass window let in some natural light. The American looked exactly like Klopp had described. The artist had done a fine job capturing his words. The wave of blonde hair, the skin stretched tight over the skull beneath, the brow and the cheekbones horizontal and parallel and close together, like two bars on an old-style football helmet, with the eyes flashing out from way behind, the mouth like a gash, plus two vertical lines, the nose like a blade, and a crease down the right cheek as if the most the mouth ever moved was in a lopsided and sardonic smile. The guy was shown in a jacket like Reacher's, pale tan denim, authentic in every respect. Under it was a white T-shirt. His collarbones stood out, like his cheekbones. His neck was shown corded with sinew. A hard scrabble guy, no longer young. Nagley said,
"Military?"
Reacher said, "Can't tell by looking."
"Then why are we staying?"
"I don't know. Ratcliffe said we could have what we want. I guess what I want is not to be trapped in someone else's mistake."
"The second rendezvous might not even be in Hamburg."
"I agree. It's probably 10-1 against, which means if we stick around, we have a 1 in 10 chance of being in the right place at the right time. Whereas, If we go back to Virginia, we have a zero chance. They're not going to meet at the Washington Monument. That's for damn sure. The translator came over and said,
Mr. Klopp is asking when you want to schedule the rest of the debriefing session?
Reacher said, Tell Mr. Klopp we're done with him. Tell him if I ever see him again, I'll pop his eyeballs out one at a time with my thumbnail. Then Griezmann came over and said,
Will you be my guests for lunch?
12 noon in Hamburg, Germany. Which was 1 o'clock in the afternoon in Kiev, Ukraine. The messenger was getting off a plane. He had been driven through the mountains to Peshawar in Pakistan and had flown to Karachi and then to Kiev. He had used a different passport for each of the flights, and he had changed his shirt once from pink to black and added shades and a Donetsk soccer supporter's hat. He was untraceable and anonymous. Ukraine border control gave him no problems. He walked through baggage claim and out of the terminal. He joined the taxi line and smoked a cigarette while he waited. The taxi was an old Czech Skoda, and he told the driver the address he wanted, which was a flower market 5 streets from his real destination, which was a small apartment occupied by 4 of the faithful from Turkmenistan and Somalia. A safe house. Always better to make the final approach on foot. Taxi drivers remembered things the same as anyone else. Some even made notes. Mileage logs, gasoline consumption, addresses. He didn't know the 4 guys, but they were expecting him. Kiev was not the same as Hamburg. He couldn't just walk in. A messenger had been sent ahead of the messenger. Such were the necessary precautions. He got out of the Skoda at the flower market. He walked between stalls crowded with bright blooms into a humid hall full of rarer specimens, and when he came out the other end, he was back in his pink shirt, and the hat and the sunglasses were gone. He walked the final 5 blocks and found the right building. It was a squat concrete tower, set off-center in a row of older and more elegant buildings, like a false tooth, as if long ago a bomb had fallen randomly and made a space. Perhaps it had. The lobby smelled of ammonia. The elevator worked, but with unpleasant noises. The upstairs hallways were narrow. He knocked on the door and waited. He counted the seconds in his head. He had knocked on a lot of doors. He knew how it worked. 1, they hear the knock. 2, they get up off the couch. 3, they thread around the clutter. 4, they step to the door. 5, they open it. The door opened. A guy stood there, on his own, with silence behind him. The messenger said,
You're expecting me.
The guy said,
We have to go out.
When?
Now.
The guy was Somali, the messenger thought, in his 20s, but already worn down to nothing but dusty skin and sinew. Primitive, like an ancestor's species. The messenger said,
I don't want to go out. I am tired. I have to be on my way first thing in the morning. I have an onward flight. No choice. We have to go out. The point of a safe house is that I don't have to go out. The Kiev soccer team is playing an evening game in Moscow. It's on the television in the bars. It starts soon because of the time zones. It would be weird for us not to go. We would stand out.
You can go.
We can't have anyone in the apartment. Not this afternoon. Someone would notice. It's a big rivalry, like a patriotic thing. We're supposed to fit in here.
The messenger shrugged. Such were the necessary precautions, and soccer wasn't so bad. He had once seen it played with a human head. He said,
Okay,
They took the stairs down, an unspoken agreement not to risk the elevator. They walked away from the flower market in a new direction, past grand but faded apartment houses with rusted ironwork and peeling stucco facades, and then between two of them into an alley the Somali said was a shortcut. It was a narrow brick passage, echoing and almost uncomfortable, but a building's depth later it opened out into a small courtyard, not much bigger than a room, which was walled in by the blank four-story backs of other buildings. There was a small patch of sky way up high. The walls were pierced here and there by blind or whitewashed windows, and they carried fat rainwater pipes and aimless loops of antenna cable. There were three guys in the courtyard. The messenger thought one of them could be the Somali's cousin. The other two were also a pair, from Turkmenistan, no doubt, the guys from the safe house. For a happy second, the messenger thought they were meeting there and all going to the bar together. Then he saw there was no other exit from the courtyard. Not a shortcut. It was a trap. And then he understood, clear as day, perfectly logical. He was a security risk, because he knew the price, $100 million, which was the single most dangerous component of the whole enterprise. Such a huge amount would set alarm bells ringing everywhere. Anyone who knew about it was automatically a potential leak. Classic theory. They had studied it in the camps with hypothetical examples. They had gamed it out. A pity, they had said. But necessary. A great struggle required great sacrifices. A great struggle required clear minds and cold hearts. The guy sent on ahead had not asked for the guest quarters to be aired out and made ready. He had carried a different instruction. The messenger stood still. He would never talk. Not him. They must know that. After all that he had done, he was different. He was safe. Wasn't he? No. These were men who played soccer with human heads. They had no room for sentiment. The Somali guy said, "I'm sorry, brother." The messenger closed his eyes. Not guns, he thought. Not in the center of Kiev. It would be knives. He was wrong. It was a hammer. In Jalalabad, it was 4:30 in the afternoon. Tea was being served in the white mud house. The new messenger had been brought to the small hot room. She was a woman, 24 years old, long black hair, skin the color of tea. She was wearing a white explorer shirt, full of loops and pockets, and khaki pants and desert boots. She was standing at attention in front of the two men, who were sitting on their cushions. The tall man said, "It's a matter of very little importance, but there is a need for speed, so you'll fly direct from Karachi. No need for caution. No one has ever seen you before. You'll meet with an American and you'll tell him we accept his price. Repeat, we accept his price. Do you understand?" The woman said, "Yes, sir." The fat man said, "The American won't mention the price, and you won't ask. It has to stay secret, because he's embarrassed we beat him down so low, and on our part we don't want the others to think we're broke, and that's all we can afford." The woman inclined her head. She said, "When shall I leave?" "Now," the tall man said. "Drive all night. Get the morning plane." Chapter 13. After lunch, Griezmann drove Reacher and Nagley to the hotel they had used before. They thanked him and waved him away, but didn't check in. Reacher didn't like to stay in the same place twice. A habit. Unnecessary, some said. He said he was 35 years old and still alive. Had to mean something. They checked Nagley's map. She put her fingernail on the safe house. She said, "Of course, they might have more than one." "Possible," Reacher said. "This whole thing is a percentage game." They set out walking and found the street they had seen before, where the four cop cars had been parked, where the hooker had been killed. They made a left toward the safe house, close but not too close, and they checked the side streets on the way. Not easy to do. Not like some parts of the world. There were no big signs, no flashing neon, no shingles swinging in the wind. Prohibited, presumably, on grounds of good taste. Every commercial unit had to be eyeballed individually. They saw a car rental franchise occupying two side-by-side addresses. Other operations were also self-explanatory, but some weren't. Reacher stepped into a lobby with armchairs and a reception desk, thinking it was a hotel, but it turned out to be a tanning salon with the booths in back. The woman at the desk laughed and then tried to suppress it, and then further atoned by mentioning a boutique establishment a block away, which turned out to be a good-looking place. There was a guy in a top hat standing ready to open the door. "You got money?" Nagley asked. "Ratcliffe will pay," Reacher said. "He doesn't know we're here." "We'll call him. We should, anyway." "From where?" "A room. Yours or mine." "We won't have rooms. They won't let us check in without money." Reacher pulled out his wad of walking-around money. Logged out, but never logged back in. A modest sum. Nagley had the same. Reacher said, "We'll get one room, for the time being, until the NSC calls him." Nagley paused a beat and said, "Okay." They went in. At that moment, the American was three streets away, slowing to a stop outside the car rental franchise they had just seen. He had stopped for an early lunch in Groningen with a glass of wine. Therefore, he lingered to let it wear off, just in case. The laws were tough. So he took a walk. It was a pretty town. Then he drove on across the nominal border, and he hit the fast road through Bremen. He enjoyed every mile, like a premature, nostalgic feeling. It would be a long time before he saw Europe again. Maybe never. He gave back the key and walked away, out of the neighborhood, toward the water, toward his place. Rented with less than a month left on the lease. Waste not, want not. Good timing. The room they got had dark green wallpaper and pewter accents all over the place. But the phone worked. Reacher got the duty NSC guy, who undertook to finance their stay through the consulate. Then White came on the line and said, "Vanderbilt went back 4 years with the Switzerland thing. Then he cross-checked. There were exactly 100 Americans in Germany that day who had visited Zurich on a prior occasion." "Good data," Reacher said, "but not definitive. He might have used the Cayman Islands, or Luxembourg, or Monaco, or maybe he went to Zurich for a vacation. I did once, and I sure as hell didn't go to a bank while I was there." White said, "Understood. But tell Vanderbilt thanks." Then Waterman got on and said, "They're nervous about you." Reacher said, "Who are? Ratcliffe and Sinclair?" "He said we should roll the dice. No point all doing it in the same place." "Getting anywhere?" "Are you?" "We're nowhere." "So are we. And there's no point being nowhere all in the same place either." "Sinclair will want to speak to you." "Tell her I'll check in later. After the consulate comes through, that might give them an incentive. And there's mail from the Department of the Army for Sergeant Nagley." "Urgent?" "I don't think so. Put it on hold until I've spoken with Sinclair. Can we agree on a time? Tell her 2 hours from now, Reacher said. They went to find the bar where Helmut Klopp had seen the rendezvous. It was 20 minutes away, the same as it was from the safe house, but on a different vector, like two spokes of the same wheel. They walked past it, not slowing down, not speeding up, looking straight ahead, inspecting the place obliquely. It was on the ground floor of an older building made of stone, which once might have been a tenement or a factory, probably burned out in the wartime firestorm, but deemed repairable. The bar had a center door and a planked wood facade, but it wasn't a rustic look, not like the side of a barn way out in the country. The planks were tight and true and planed smooth. They were dark gold in color, heavily varnished and shiny, like a rowboat on a lake in a park. There were small windows with cream lace cafe curtains hung behind the bottom halves, and loops of small paper flags hung on strings behind the top halves. All the paper flags were German. The light inside looked dim and amber. Nagli said,
"We have two people following us."
Reacher said, "Where?"
"On the corner, 50 yards behind us."
He didn't look. He said,
"Who?" "Two males, between 30 and 40, bigger than me and smaller than you. Probably not Germans. They walk like Americans."
"How do Americans walk?"
"Like us."
"How long have they been there?"
"I'm not sure."
"Cheekbones?"
"No. Also too tall."
"Okay," Reacher said. "Let's get a cup of coffee." They strolled on at the same lazy pace and came to a pastry shop with a display case full of confections and an espresso machine and 4 small tables with 2 chairs each. The tables and chairs were metal, painted silver. They were right up against the windows with a good view of the street. Nagli sat down and Reacher went to the counter. He ordered 2 double espressos and called, "You want a cake?"
"Sure,"
Nagli said.
"Apple strudel."
2, Reacher said to the woman at the register. The old army rule, eat when you can. The next chance could be days away. The woman pantomimed that Reacher should go sit down and she would bring a tray. Reacher pantomimed that he wanted to pay right away. His own rule. He might need to leave without warning, and he didn't like to stiff ordinary working folk. He got his change and stepped over to the table and sat down, and Nagli craned her neck very discreetly and said,
"They saw us come in here. They sped up. We'll see them in a minute."
Reacher checked the view left and right. There was another coffee shop across the street, 20 yards farther on. Tables in the window, a good view. Anyone with any sense would stop in there. They could wait as long as they needed to, raising no suspicion at all, and then they could resume the tale whenever their quarry moved.
"There they are,"
Nagli said. Reacher saw 2 guys, as advertised, in their 30s, bigger than her and smaller than him. Maybe 6 feet and 200 pounds. Short hair, walking like Americans. Dressed like Americans. Specifically, to his practiced eye, dressed like off-duty American military. Put a civilian in uniform for an hour, for a movie role or a fancy dress party, and he looks wrong, somehow, as if uncomfortable or unaccustomed. Equally, put a guy who has worn a uniform for the last 10 years in jeans and a jacket, and he looks wrong, too. Equally unaccustomed. Wrong posture, too neat, creases too sharp, no slouch or shuffle. They came on the same way Reacher and Nagli had passed the bar, not slowing down, not speeding up, looking straight ahead, checking the scene in the corners of their eyes. Big, hard faces, worn hands. NCOs, probably. Lifers, by the look of them. They ambled on, and one whispered something to the other, and the other nodded, and they ducked in at the coffee shop 20 yards farther on, across the street. Cars drove by, both ways, and shoppers and office workers hustled past on the sidewalks. The guys got a table in the window and sat there, pretending not to look at Reacher and Negley, just as Reacher and Negley were pretending not to look at them. "Who are they?" Reacher said.
"Can't tell by looking," Negley said.
"Ballpark guess?"
"Army, obviously. Terminal at sergeant. Probably not combat troops. Old sergeants in the battle area look different than that. Those guys are some other thing."
"But they're not company clerks."
"No, they're muscle workers."
"Agreed. They're support troops of some kind. Transportation, maybe? Maybe they load trucks and unload them."
"What are you thinking?"
"I'm wondering why they're here," Reacher said. "How did they know?"
"Griezmann? Maybe he made a call as soon as he left us at the hotel.
But we didn't stay at that hotel. They didn't follow us from there, because we didn't start from there."
"Which means the NSC leaked it. They're the only ones who knew what hotel we were in, which is ridiculous."
"Agreed. Therefore, they didn't follow us from either hotel. We came to them. They were waiting here."
"Why?"
"Maybe that bar is more than just a place for like-minded folk. Maybe it's a rendezvous for all kinds of people. Maybe money is earned there." "So what happens when two unexplained military cops show up in town? They post sentries, just in case. And here we are. We just tripped their wire."
"They don't know we're military cops. They don't know our names. No one even knows we're in the country."
"How did we find out about Helmut Klopp?"
"Griezmann passed on some dumb police report to the consulate."
"Because he's a noble citizen?"
"No, because he was covering his very considerable ass."
"Such a guy would also pass on a dumb police report about two military personnel recorded in a homicide investigation, walking past the scene and claiming to be tourists. Our names are right there in black and white, so he had to pass it on. Probably straight to HQ in Stuttgart, where someone looked us up and saw the 110th in our recent past and hit some kind of a secret alarm button, like in a bank. No one heard anything, but people started scrambling all over town. Who are we here for? This is a broad sweep. We're going to upset all kinds of people."
"Suppose these are the right people?"
"You take the one on the left, and you can have the Legion of Merit."
"They would never give a Legion of Merit to a sergeant."
"They're not the right people. I'm a lucky man, but not that lucky."
"So who are they?"
"Can't tell by looking," Reacher said.
They chased the last strudel crumbs around their plates and drained the coffee cups down to the muddy paste at the bottom, and then they stood up fast and hustled out the door.
Chapter 14 Reacher and Negley dodged pedestrians on the sidewalk and cars on the street, and they headed diagonally toward the second coffee shop on the other side. Through the window, they saw the two guys startle and sit up straight. Too late. They were sitting together on the far side of a corner table for four, where their angle was good, which left two empty chairs between them and the rest of the room. Negley went in first and took one of the chairs. Reacher followed and took the other, which meant the two guys were trapped, all quiet and genteel and civilized. But they had no way out, not unless Reacher and Negley stood up again to let them by, which was not on the immediate agenda. Reacher said, "Listen carefully, guys, because I'm going to say this once and once only. We have a one-time special offer. We'll help you if we can. Minimum sentences in exchange for full disclosure, unless it's the one thing we're interested in. But I don't think it is. I think you're the wrong kind of guys for that." The guy on the left said, "Get lost." He was closer to 40 than 30, with graying black hair buzzed short and a doughy slab of a face, like an uncooked loaf. He had dark eyes and calluses on his hands. His accent was from Arkansas, but Tennessee or maybe Mississippi. Reacher said, "You know our names because someone checked us out and raised the alarm. Therefore, you know we're MPs. You're under arrest as of this moment."
"You can't do that."
"I'm pretty sure we can. The uniform code says so. We could arrest the chief of staff if we wanted to. We would need a pretty good case, but in theory we could do it. You present much less of a problem."
"You have no jurisdiction."
"That's a big word."
"We're not military personnel."
"I think you are."
"We're not American either."
"I think you are."
"You're wrong."
"Prove it. Show me ID.
"Get lost,"
the guy said again. The law in Germany requires you to identify yourselves to the police on request.
"German police, not you."
"You're doing this wrong. Now you're heading for maximum sentences." The guy said nothing. The other guy was watching the conversation, his eyes going back and forth like tennis. Reacher said, "Show me ID. The guy on the left said,
"We'd like to leave now. Please, step aside."
"Not going to happen."
"We could make it happen."
"You could try," Reacher said, "but you'd get hurt. You're out of your league. You're up against something you never saw before."
"You have a mighty high opinion of yourself."
Reacher nodded at Nagley. "I'm talking about her. I'm just here to clean up the mess." They looked at Nagley. Dark hair, dark eyes, a tan. A good-looking woman. She smiled at them. Her forearms were on the table. Reacher noticed her nails. They were shiny with clear polish and neatly filed. Even on the right, which she must have done left-handed. She wouldn't use a nail salon. She couldn't bear her hands to be touched. She looked at one guy, and then the other. The guy on the left shrugged and raised up an inch off his chair and dug in his back pants pocket. The other guy did the same. Reacher watched. Safe enough. No one kept the weapon in his back pants pocket. Uncomfortable. Not readily accessible. The guys came out with two IDs each. Plastic, the size of credit cards, but not. They were national identity cards and driver's licenses. Both had Bundesrepublik Deutschland at the top. Germany. The Federal Republic. The photographs were right. The guy on the left was named Bernd Dernberger, and the guy on the right was named Klaus Augenthaler. Reacher said, "You're German citizens?" The guy on the left took his cards back and nodded. "Naturalized?" The guy nodded again. "Did you have to take a test?"
"Sure."
"Was it hard?"
"Not very."
"What state are we in?"
"Germany."
"That's the country. It's a federal system. There's a clue where it says Bundesrepublik. It means it has states, like America. Only 16 of them, not 50, but the principle is the same."
"I guess I forget."
"Hamburg," Reacher said.
"That's the town.
Also the state, like New York. Next to Schleswig-Holstein and Bremen.
Then comes Lower Saxony.
Did you change your name?
Why not?
Why Dernberger?
I like the way it sounds.
Did you retain your American citizenship?
No. We renounced. We're not dual. So there's nothing you can do.
We can be impolite.
What?
Americans often are, overseas. You Europeans are always complaining about it. We could just sit here in the way.
No. We're going to leave now.
Why?
Because we want to.
You need the bathroom?
No.
You got a pressing engagement?
We got freedom of movement.
Sure you do. Like a person in Times Square trying to get to work on time. No way to do that unless he runs right over the tourist in front of him. The guy said nothing. Reacher looked at the other guy and said, How did you choose your name?
The same,
the guy said.
I liked the sound of it.
Really? Say it for me. The guy didn't answer. Say it for me, Reacher said again. Let me hear how nice it sounds. No response. Say it for me. Nothing. Reacher hooked his thumbs under the edge of the tabletop and clamped down hard with his fingers. He leaned forward. He said, Say your name for me. The guy couldn't. Reacher said, So we got one guy who can't remember Germany has states, and another guy who can't remember his own name. You're not doing a real great job of convincing me. He was clamping the table and leaning forward, not for the drama, but to be ready for what came next. And it came right then. The guy on the right shoved the table hard, aiming to jab Reacher in the midsection with it, like a punch, or even to knock him over backward in his chair. But Reacher was ready, and he shoved back 10 times as hard and drove the wooden edge into the guy's gut. A satisfactory blow, but the movement of the furniture gave the guy on the left a widening gap to stand up in, which he did. And then he slid around behind Reacher's seated back and hustled for the street door. Except by then, Nagley was also on her feet, stepping left, leading with her shoulder, drifting toward the guy and then rotating savagely and slamming a roundhouse right into his chest, dead on the solar plexus, which stood him up, panicked and breathless, like he had swallowed an electric cattle prod, which gave her plenty of time to call her next shot, which was her left knee to his groin, followed by her right knee to his face, as he crumpled to the floor in front of her. Reacher kept the other guy hemmed in behind the table. He said, See what I mean? Now I have to clean that up. He turned his head and saw an old lady behind the counter getting ready to scream or faint or grab the phone. He called out, Sexueller Angriff, which he knew from taking a prisoner to a civilian courthouse in Frankfurt meant sexual assault. He pointed to himself and added, Militärpolizei, which he knew meant military police. The old woman calmed down a little. The forces of order were in control, and actually nothing was broken. The guy had gone down and missed everything. Nagley was a precision worker. There was blood on the floor, but not much. Nothing a minute with a mop wouldn't take care of. No harm, no foul, overall. Reacher said to Nagley, Ask to use her phone. Call Stuttgart and find out who we know who could get here today. But these guys? The background noise is starting. We're going to need garbage disposal. Not through Sinclair. This is army business. We shouldn't bore her with the details. Nagley spoke no more German than Reacher, so she mimed with raised eyebrows and her right hand, thumb, and pinky, the universal dumb show for a telephone,
and the old lady bustled off to the far end of the counter and came back with an old black instrument tethered by a wire. Nagley dialed and waited and started